is their life on Mars.
More of Lake Effect Now from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Astronomers, astrophysicists, and fans of space travel marked the end of an era earlier this month. After 15 years on the surface of Mars, the Opportunity rover mission finally ended after more than 6 months had gone by with no success in communicating with the craft.
The robotic exploration rover and its fellow vehicle called Spirit landed on Mars in 2004 with a planned mission of just 90 days, but both lasted well beyond scientists' expectations. Spirit signed off in 2010, but Opportunity lived on, capturing images and data and setting the record for most distance logged on the red planet, more than 28 miles.
Still, Lake Effect Astronomy contributor Gene Creighton and our Bonnie North couldn't help but be a bit sad with the end of the mission.
Well, it's our spokesperson on Mars, right? It's one of our spokespersons on Mars. And what's amazing about this, the machine that could, is that, as we've heard now many times, it was designed to last for 90 days, and it's been there for almost 15 years. So this was truly a trooper that was able to traverse more than a marathon on Mars. It's going to be probably a long time before a person is able to do that.
And the kind of information that it collected and the kind of insights that we gained because of it are immeasurable almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are some of the highlights that it did?
Well, that mission helped us see what we now fondly call the blueberries. So they look like blueberries in the pictures, and it's one of those, for the planetary geologists, they look at that and they say, oh, that's water. That is the sign that there not only was there standing water, but that it was there for a long time. These are the direct clues that you need before you can make statements like, yeah, the weather was probably good enough, but that is proof. We also are able to see the various types of terrain because we've now gone from big craters to smaller craters. We've been able really to understand more about the geological formations on Mars.
I remember back in the 90s when the first, and I don't remember which rover it was at this point, but I remember we were all glued to our televisions,
yeah,
waiting for those first images and standing there in front of the TV and thinking, I'm looking at Mars.
Right.
I'm looking at Mars.
Right.
Oh my, not an artist's rendition,
right,
but I'm actually looking,
right,
at it.
So that was Pathfinder, because,
okay,
it was a proof of concept. There had been many failures, and you saw how, like, the thing was supposed to unfold. Chuka, 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 the thing was to come, supposed to come down. It was supposed to take a picture, and everybody was like, and it worked.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And so that really ushered in the modern day Mars exploration, didn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Because we had a hiatus of all kinds of mishaps and crashes, uncommunicative machines, and then the light, da-da-da-da. And that really was also proof of concept that the idea that you could bounce a rover on Mars, it was a thing. And it works. Or that you could approach Mars and then have it very softly land like we tried with and succeeded with Curiosity. So getting something on Mars safely, softly is hard.
Yeah, among many other things about getting to Mars.
That's right, exactly. So I think Curiosity, Opportunity, Spirit, but especially Opportunity now, since it's been there, a champion for so long, a veteran, if you will. It was just a little thing that could. And where Spirit, you know, got stuck and we had to give up a long time ago, Opportunity just kept on going. And that makes us all cheer.
Yeah. Well, let's bring things back to Earth a little bit. And you mentioned something before we turned on the microphones that got me thinking. So, of course, now I want the answer. And you were talking about what makes the seasons happen here on Earth. And I realized that I kind of know, but I couldn't tell you. If somebody came up to me and said, explain to me how the seasons happen, I would say, well, I know it's got something to do with the tilt of the Earth and it's how it goes around the sun, but that's about as far as I could go.
Right. I suspect that most people, that's as far as they could go. And this was something they learned. You know, they feel like they ought to know this. They learned this in some part of their education. But it was fuzzy even at the time. So, yes, it does have to do with the fact that the Earth is tilted. If the Earth was not tilted, we would not experience seasons. So that's one takeaway. Yes, the Earth is going, of course, around the sun. And because of this tilt, that means that sometimes in a given location, let's say in the northern hemisphere, the sun is going to be higher in the sky, which makes it more effective. That is the key point. If the sun is high in the sky, that means that a certain amount of radiation gets beamed in a area, let's call it A. And if you have the sun now at a low angle, that means that that very same energy gets distributed, let's say, in 2A area, which means that if you're standing, if you're a person standing in one of these areas, you're going to get more energy or less energy. To add insult to the injury, if we're approaching summer, then the days are also going to be longer. So not only is the sun more effective, but it has more hours in the day to work, which, of course, changes the temperature, the average temperatures that we see. So I think part of the various reasons to be confused here. One of the things is people use sometimes the term seasons, weather, and climate somewhat interchangeably, or maybe they're not clear on how they're different. So a season is something that's going to happen, rain or shine, those two things I mentioned, the height of the sun and the length of the day, rain or shine, that's going to happen. So I think it's interesting that trees don't respond to temperature because they've been tricked before. From an evolutionary standpoint, it doesn't make sense to just say, oh, warm day, I think I'm going to put my buds out. They wait for the length of day, which is a sure thing.
I have seen, though, trees budding early.
But then they arrest it.
Ah, so the
then
tree
they
knows.
Say, oh, yeah, no, that was too soon. And frankly, I think more likely bushes. So I have some silly crocuses on the side of my house. And the moment that the temperature does anything mildly above 50, they all say, wah. And they have gotten snowed upon so many times. So little plants don't put out so much energy so they can afford to make that mistake, but an old stately tree cannot. So they will wait. So if you notice, the maples will wait until the light has gotten really at a certain reliable
basically
place.
Basically the angle of the light.
Yep. Now the other time that people get confused because these terms sometimes are used interchangeably is they think, well, it's supposed to be spring, and then they complain, it's supposed to be spring, but look at the temperature. The weather is somewhat correlated with the seasons, but of course we know that there are other effects that can play, temperature of the lake, different kinds of currents if you live by the ocean, that can totally change the overall trend to having momentarily a blip in the temperature that you would expect. So it could be too hot or it could be too cold. Finally, another term that's related to these things is climate. Climates are long-term trends, and they can be superimposed. I mean, the seasonal stuff is happening anyway. Climate tells you if you're seeing tendencies as we are now, where the temperature is higher overall. That doesn't mean that one day it won't be excruciatingly cold, as we found out recently, but it's just telling you if you average out the temperatures over a period of time, you see a trend.
And the seasons are happening no matter what because of
the sun. Yep, every year you can literally set your clocks as we do based on that.
Well, and it explains why there really isn't much of a seasonal change around the equator.
That's right. One of the things that people have in their hearts, and I get it because we all have the experience of if I'm cold, I go closer to the heat source, and if I'm warm, I back off. People somewhere in the back of their minds remember those little pictures they saw in school books of elliptical orbits, and they figure, well, clearly we must be closer to the sun when it's warmer. It's useful to recall that we are closest to the sun around the 4th of January. And that's just telling us that the distance between the Earth and the Sun only changes by 3%. It's really not a big deal. So that's not the reason why we have summer or winter. It has to do with the tilt of the Earth. And the distance to the Sun is a minor effect. So that tells us that the winters in the Southern Hemisphere are going to be just a tad warmer than the average temperature in the Northern Hemisphere at wintertime. And that's about it.
So not much change at all.
Not much change, no. Because setting aside those exaggerated pictures of ellipses that everybody has seen in textbooks, if you look at the Earth from above, the Earth's orbit is very close to a circle. A circle is an ellipse.
Sure.
But the effect is very small, and you couldn't eyeball it. You required somebody like Kepler, who was a brilliant mathematician, to take 20 years of data to figure out, okay, Mars isn't exactly a circle. It is a bit elliptical. Just a little bit. I mean, a 3% is really a
not
very
much.
Mild
to
effect.
To the eye, it would
you wouldn't
around.
Be able to see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the textbooks exaggerate that so that you get in your mind what an ellipse looks like. But I think it perhaps reinforces that misconception that somehow the seasons are connected to the distance we have to the Sun, which does change, yes, but only ever so slightly.
And doesn't have the effect that we all think it does.
It certainly doesn't, yeah. No.
So despite the fact that we're due to get more snow here in Milwaukee, the angle of the Sun is going to predictably come and spring will happen. That's what you're telling me.
That is right. So have faith. This will happen. It might be delayed a few days, but we can be sure that the days are going to start getting longer than the nights, and that can't be changed by the weather. The Sun is going to be getting higher every day. So even if it snows, the Sun will beat it down.
Excellent. That is very good news. Well, Jean, hopefully the Sun will beat it down by the time we talk next month, because it will be towards the end of March, and we should be having a lot more light in the sky and maybe even warmer temperatures to go with it, even though I know they're not related. But I want to thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you.
Jean Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium on the campus of UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. You can find past conversations with her at wuwm.com.